Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training System, BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. I got another special guest on the phone today. I got Andy Clower. Andy, how's it going today, buddy?
Great, man. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Andy is the co-owner of Fitness Evolved, and where exactly are you guys located at?
We're located in Berkeley, California.
In Berkeley, all right.
Yeah.
Knew you were in the Bay Area there somewhere. And Andy here and I actually met at the last Results Fitness Mastermind group meeting thing that we have every 6 months. And it was kind of funny because he had written an article on minimalist shoe training versus barefoot training and kind of some of the differences there. And him and I started chatting about some of my thoughts about how foot mechanics apply to cycling, and found out we had some good stuff to share. So I knew I had to get Andy on because this guy knows so much more about the foot and how it affects what's going on, and a whole lot of other things. So Andy, I'll open it up to you to kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in all of this, and then we'll kind of dig into some of the cool stuff that you're doing with your clients and how that'll apply to some of the riders that are listening to this podcast. So yeah, man, take it away. Tell us all about yourself.
Oh, great. Like I said, I'm from Berkeley, California. My background is actually in athletic training. I spent about 5 years working in orthopedics, also working for sports teams, taking care of all the injured athletes, and then another 5 years working in physical therapy. And once I decided that I was getting tired of rehabbing people that were getting hurt in gyms, so I figured there was a better way to do it. So my partner and I started Fitness Evolved in Berkeley about 2 years ago, doing a different style of training where we're focused on corrective exercise, constant assessment and reassessment to make sure people are improving and not in danger and getting better. So just in the past 2 years, my eyes have been open to a little more work with the feet and how it applies to body function, muscle function, and specifically how the brain is involved in it and how it actually controls everything. And it starts with the feet and works its way up. So it's been really cool discoveries, and we've had lots of cool with our clients using maybe just going into feet and ankle mobility. And yeah, I'm excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, excellent. Well, right on. So, well, I guess kind of jump right into it. You've got a pretty unique combination of things, I guess, for lack of a better term, that you use with your clients and some things that you do. So I guess just kind of from an overall standpoint, and then we'll kind of like, dig into some specific stuff, like what do you do that so, makes your approach so unique, and how do you integrate some of the stuff that a lot of people haven't even like thought about integrating into their training, into the programs?
Right. Well, we do, our biggest thing is we address movement. Any kind of gain you want to make, whether it's in performance, strength, get out of pain, whatever, the number one key comes down to improving movement. And what we've done a good job of in the past in the industry so far is working on muscles and joints, getting those, but we've also kind of forgot about the other parts of our movement, which is our vision and also our vestibular or inner ear, our balance systems. Those all three play together in movement. And so everybody that comes in our gym gets an assessment for visual skills and kind of athletic sport visual skills, a balance assessment, as well with a functional movement screen. And those are all tied together. So whatever we find in the assessment, we train vision with balance, with inner ear training, and also start to integrate it with a proper movements, breaking it down to the most basic single joint movements and then building it back up to more complex. So as we improve movement, strength improves, speed improves, performance improves, pain goes down, everything together, because we're one. Our body is one big system, not a bunch of small things working independently.
Yeah.
So we've learned to integrate. We're starting to integrate more and more, and as we integrate more and more, people's results are skyrocketing, and people are actually becoming more athletic and more mobile, stronger, faster.
Excellent, excellent. Well, so I'm actually curious. Can you give us an example of some of the things that you do to check vision skills and balance, because I think that a lot of times when people hear balance training or something like that, I mean, it's there's obviously some people that are doing some circus looking stuff out there, and I'm assuming that you've probably got a little bit better approach than that. So what if you can share with us, what are some things you do to kind of check some of those things?
Well, it's really the balance. For one thing, anything, well, we don't, everything comes back to function. So training somebody on a surface that doesn't, that moves all over the place, is wobbly or squishy, isn't how we exist in the world. We exist mostly by driving through a solid ground or pushing off of a hard pedal. So as we train, if we train to balance on squishy surfaces, we get better at that, but we don't actually get better at balancing when we need to balance. So we'll actually go to the main part of the inner ear. Actually, how does your body respond when your head turns to the left or to the right? Or how does it respond when your head tilts to the right or to the left? Those are where our balance center lives, in our inner ear. We have three different canals that actually, as your head turns, those nerves get excited, tells our brain that our head is turning a certain direction, and then our body has to respond and line up appropriately to make sure we don't fall over. So by even simple as drill is standing on one foot and being able to quickly turn your head to the left or to the right and not fall over, that's actually improving your balance skill and integration, because now you're actually involving the system that's in charge of it.
Excellent, man. Excellent. No, that's some good advice there. I know, especially since we got a lot of mountain bikers listening, balance is one of those things that they're always looking for. I guess kind of digging in further into the foot, since that's kind of the area that we kind of have a real common passion for. And you said it was funny after I'd mentioned to you about, you know, cycling and trying to apply some of the minimalist shoe or barefoot, you know, stuff to cycling, that you'd asked around and found out that cycling, this is an area that's kind of been overlooked in cycling. And so I guess for just kind of a quick refresher, and I think what was real interesting is you actually distinguish between minimalist shoe training and barefoot training. And I think sometimes a lot of people lump all that together and say, like, hey, if I'm wearing, you know, a pair of Nike Freeze or, you know, one of these new minimalist shoes, like, that is, you know, barefoot training. And you actually make a distinction with that. So I guess kind of start with that. Like, what do we want to keep in mind with the foot, and what are some of those distinctions?
Cool. Yeah. Barefoot training is what it is. It's barefoot training. Having anything between your foot and the ground is considered a minimalist shoe training. What gets mixed up is as the way our feet are designed is, we actually have tons of tiny pressure sensors on the bottom of our foot that actually help us feel the ground, feel where our body is in space. We call our proprioception, our brain's map of where our body is in space. As those pressure sensors actually get excited, our body responds by activating muscles to keep us there or to move us in a certain direction. Anything in between the ground and the foot dampens that sensor, that pressure, slows down reaction speed, slows down mobility, everything else. So a barefoot training on the ground, you're going to get a lot more reaction time out of training with pure barefoot than you would have putting anything in between your foot and the ground in a shoe. Most shoes, too, minimalist shoes, are mobile, but they're not fully mobile. Like the Nike Freeze, those kind of shoes that have an arch still, they have a heel drop. Those are different. They're actually still supporting the foot a little bit. So anytime you are putting something between your foot and the ground, your foot's still relying on that surface to help you move, help you stabilize yourself, help your body align up. And that is a difference, the different entrance in training. So there's a little bit slow response, a little bit slow reaction. You still have a limited mobility, because there's something blocking your foot in the ground. It doesn't allow for complete full movement.
Nice. Well, I guess kind of following up on that, when I hear you say that, I think that, two questions or two things kind of pop in mind. One, that there actually is a benefit to be had from actually taking everything off of your feet and doing some stuff, walking around completely barefoot, or even training barefoot. I mean, one of the good things about, me owning a private training facility is I encourage my people to actually walk around without shoes on, and I get to train barefoot. But it's funny, it freaks some people out in my videos. They see me training with no shoes on, and they're like, you're going to drop that kettlebell on your foot. So there is some advantage to be gained there, but also, I would assume that you would have some sort of progression, like, somebody going from, wearing a regular athletic shoe to just straight no shoes at all, you know, trying to go out and run barefoot and do all their training barefoot, is going to run into some problems. So, you know, what, you know, what's, I guess, what's your thoughts on that? Like, what advice do you have for people that are wanting to take advantage of barefoot training, but not, you know, jacking themselves up in the process?
Right. It's definitely a progression. So it's like anything, you know, you can't jump in the gym and go from lifting a, from deadlifting the bar to deadlifting 500 pounds in one session. It's a progression because there's a lot of force going through the foot every time you take a step. So on average, every step you take, there's 7 times your body weight going through your foot. So going from a maximally supported shoe into nothing below it, you've infinitely increased the amount of force going through your foot. So it's a progression. What we use here at Gem, we actually use a system called Z-Health. It's a very, very strong, very, very practical, integrated system. Works on very, very good quality mobility. We have people take their shoes off. We do some simple exercises called toe pulls that are in the Z-Health mobility routine. You build just quality midfoot mobility. Everybody has mobility in their toes, but no mobility in the midfoot and the arch, where most of the joints in the foot are. So we spend a lot of time working on midfoot mobility, and then going into the ankle as well. So once we get the foot moving, we actually start to actively move the ankle. Have people walking around barefoot once they get moving, and then slowly start to work into lunging, squatting, all those kind of things without shoes on to build strength and build endurance. Takes some time. It actually takes a few weeks to build that strength up before we even put somebody out on the road trying to run or jog without support below. It'll be kind of the equivalent of, I used to use this analogy, is you have a gymnast who's used to doing lots of handsprings and tumbling. They break their wrist, and they're in a cast for 6 weeks, and then they go right back onto the mat and try to handspring again. There's not much strength there. You have to kind of rebuild the musculature, rebuild the strength, rebuild the springiness in the muscles to actually get what you're trying to get out of the barefoot training.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, so definitely something that needs to be progressed into. I think a lot of times people hear, you know, something and the reaction is, well, I'm going to like just jump into it, you know, gung ho, all in, and end up, you know, hurting themselves in some sort of way, and then writing off that whole, you know, oh, I got hurt, you know, barefoot running or barefoot training. And right. When it was more just a matter of not progressing into it and stuff like that. So I guess what's some of the stuff that you found, like when we, you know, getting into the heart of it, I mean, obviously one of the things that I'm a big advocate for is trying to restore natural foot movement as much as possible. I mean, I think, you know, I use the term barefoot pedaling just because of the really just, it's a term that plays off barefoot running and barefoot training and some, you know, something that people are familiar with. And like we've already established, there is a difference between minimalist shoe and actually having some sort of shoe on and actually doing it barefoot. I don't think I'll ever get to the point where I advocate people actually go out and ride without anything on their feet.
Not
and yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, when you and I, you know, try to talk about some different names other than barefoot pedaling, when we come up with something, we'll start calling it that. But for lack of a better term, that's what I use right now. But like one of my passions is trying to educate people on the dangers of, I mean, particularly clipless pedals and shoes, and what happens when you restrict natural foot movement, or, you know, like a float on clipless pedals is something that's sold as like, you know, you need, you know, quote unquote optimal float, which is more of a two-dimensional movement than allowing three-dimensional movement of the foot. So what starts to happen both from a physical standpoint, like wear and tear on the joints and changing how we move. And also I would assume that when you start interfering with the foot, that it's going to start interfering with things like balance and reaction time and stuff like that. So what's, you know, what are the boogeymen? Like what happens when we start screwing around with Mother Nature too much?
Exactly. You said it. Once we start to mess around with things, we lose reaction time, we lose balance. It's pretty cool. The way our body is designed is we are designed to move freely and move fully. Anytime there's a restriction in that movement, it's considered a threat to our system by our brain. As it happens, we start to move differently. Things tighten up, muscles shorten because now there's a threat to our body because the movement is being restricted. The muscles that control those areas that are being restricted are going to naturally tighten up to protect that area as your dev muscles tighten up and shorten to protect that area that's being restricted. You get bad joint mechanics, all kinds of things happen. So a lot of the overuse injuries that happen are your brain's response to things being locked up and not moving like that's supposed to. It's a threat to your brain. It knows that, so we start to feel pain signals. We get pain in the area. We get, a lot of times get inflammation in different joints, different tissues, just because now what should be natural is not natural anymore. We're actually, it's being restricted. So, like you said, the two-dimensional thing versus three-dimensional movement is very, 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 very real and very important. If you watch a person walk, their foot doesn't just hit heel to toe. It actually rolls. So there's a forward, backward, plantar flexion. There's also a rolling motion. As you roll through your foot, you hit some weight on the outside of your foot. And if you actually feel it, if you kind of slow way down, there's actually a thing called an arthrokinetic reflex. So as the joint moves, the muscles that control that area will actually activate and fire. So as you hit, if you actually take a slow step, you hit your outside of your foot on the ground, you actually feel your glute muscles start to turn on and engage and fire. As you roll through the midfoot, almost over the top of your foot, you actually start to feel your quads fire, and again to the ball of the foot and the inside, you will actually start to fire your adductors and your psoas, your hip flexors. So if you take that into a second stroke, letting your foot roll through that entire process, gets glute activation, quad activation, hip flexor activation, and actually get a full powerful pedal stroke. When you lock that up and you take one of those dimensions away, you lose muscle firing. You put more stress on joint, bad joint angles, and bad, pretty much set yourself up for some kind of injury down the line.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, you start messing around with the foot, and that also interferes with balance and, you know, reaction time and a lot of things that you know, most riders have probably never even considered being affected by their feet.
Yeah, like I said earlier, the pressure system on the bottom of the foot is our brain's first sensor where our body is in space. And once as you deaden that, those sensors, our brains now are left to guess at where our body is in space and what's going on, and has to make decisions based on what information it has available. The less information it has available, the less it's able to predict, and the slower reaction time is, the slower we're able to actually correct and respond to what we're trying to do.
Nice. All right. So, I guess, you know, as one of the things that, the common arguments that I get against this idea is, well, you know, if this was such a good idea and people should be riding flat pedals, which is, you know, basically I'm a huge advocate for people, you know, getting away from the clipless pedals and riding flat pedals, which, you know, allows you to place your foot more naturally on the pedal, allows your foot to actually go through that three-dimensional rolling process that it goes through when you're walking or running without the clipless pedals. But, you know, then they point out, well, if that was true, then everybody in the Tour de France would be riding flats. So I guess what is, you know, how would someone kind of integrate? Because obviously there's a difference between health and performance. And so, you know, what would your response be to someone who's like, well, you know, clipless pedals obviously enhance performance because that's what the pros use?
My response usually is, how good would they be if they were actually using flat pedals and their feet were allowed to move? They're cycling at a pretty high level right now in the clipless pedals where they're locked in the place. How much do you, if we can actually definitively prove that there's better muscle firing, better performance with a flat pedal, with the foot rolling, how much better would those cyclists in the Tour de France be performing if their foot were able to do what they're naturally designed to do?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I totally agree. I kind of the example of the old Fosbury flop in the high jump, and like, you know, way back in the day, everybody used some type of crazy scissor kick, high jump motion, and that's how people won the Olympics, using that method, and that was just how everybody did it. And then, you know, old Fosbury came along and showed a different way to do it. But, you know, if you just continue to fall back on the argument of, well, you know, all the best high jumpers in the world use this technique right here, and what we found out was, well, what we found out was who was the best at using that technique, not that that technique was actually the best to use. And so I think, you know, just kind of food for thought for everyone out there. And I guess too, something and get your thoughts on this, because, you know, track athletes do this as well. You know, they have racing flats, but they don't train in their racing flats. You know, they understand that I'm gonna put a shoe on my foot that's gonna allow me to, you know, gain a little bit of performance. It will increase my performance, but if I use it all the time, it interferes with how my foot naturally moves enough to cause issues. And so, you know, like I said, coming from a track background, I know, you know, we had our training flats and then we had our racing flats, and we understood racing flats were for race day and would cause issues if we used them all the time. So I guess from a professional athlete standpoint, I mean, would you say maybe, you know, spending time training you know, on flats, allowing natural foot movement to occur, and then using the clipless pedals to help enhance performance on race day might be a good compromise?
It could possibly be. That would have to be something you have to kind of examine and test. And what I would do is compare the two. So I would actually try a performance test, not during race day, but a performance-based training session in flats. Compare that with a performance-based training session in your race shoes and see which performs the best. There's value to both. There's the rule of specificity too. So whatever you're racing in, you do want to train in to some extent.
Yeah.
But like you said, there is a lot of value in actually letting your foot move, or actually having the flats to actually build natural proper movement. Once you have that built, you can go into a stiffer shoe and learn how to move your foot in that stiffer shoe and perform in that stiffer shoe. But you have to start at the basics first. You have to learn to walk before you can walk.
Yeah.
Baseline first, build that base mobility, build those foot mechanics, and then start to let the mechanics happen in the shoe, in the whichever shoe you decide to race in.
Yeah. Nice. Excellent. Well, right on, man. Well, I think we've covered some pretty good stuff. I just kind of looking over the list of things that you'd sent me, I think we kind of went over most of it there, and I think just some good info for people, both, you know, who are interested in barefoot training and running in particular, and also kind of how some of the stuff applies to the bike. So anything else you want to share with us, or anything, you know, pop into your head while we were chatting doing this?
No, I think it's a great topic that needs to be looked at a lot more, and even explored. People, don't be afraid to experiment and try, because like you said, it takes one person to change the way things are done to start a new trend and to improve it anymore. So I would say don't be afraid to try things, try something new and see how it works. If it doesn't work, then you can always go back.
Yeah.
I think it's a great topic to look into even more in the community. I think I would say also, too, there's a value to barefoot training in the gym, working out barefoot. But also, once you actually build that foot mobility, the mechanics, training in the shoes you'd be racing in would be a huge benefit for you too.
Nice.
So not all the time training, but spending some time in those shoes and working on strength and reaction time and body mechanics in the shoes you're racing in.
Yeah.
A huge carryover to your race day as well.
Yeah. No, I kind of think of like powerlifters and gear. You know, like they need to train sometime in gear. You know, with bench shirts and the suits and all that stuff. But you know, you want to train with it enough to be comfortable with it in competition and know how to use it, but you don't want to use it every single day that you train. So that I kind of look at it that way. So excellent. Yeah, and good point, man. For you cyclists out there, get your shoes off your feet. You know, don't be afraid to let your toes and the bottom of your feet actually contact the ground and spend some time there. People, you'll enjoy it. It's funny, man. I lived for 3 years in Hawaii, and man, I think I wore shoes like maybe, I mean, if I wasn't riding my bike, I was in flip-flops, you know, just running around or running around barefoot. So I hate shoes. You know, once you get used to your feet moving around normally, shoes just don't feel right. So
it changes your whole world view. Your feet also, once your feet are unlocked out of their cage, everything, your whole world view changes. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, excellent. Well, right on, Andy. Well, if anyone is in the Berkeley area and wants to contact you about, you know, learn more about what you do or getting set up on a training program, which I highly recommend if you guys have access to somebody of Andy's intelligence and innovation, you know, should definitely take advantage of that if you're in that area. But what's the easiest way for people to get a hold of you if they want to learn more or set up a training session?
The easiest way to get a hold of us is through our website. It's www.fitness-evolved.com. And shoot me an email actually would be a quick way to get a hold of me too. The email address is info.fitnessevolved@gmail.com. We check it regularly, so shoot me an email, tell me you heard me on the podcast, and we'll get you in for your assessment as soon as possible.
Excellent. Right on. Yeah, so that was fitness-evolved.com. And yeah, you guys can check out more of what Andy's doing there. So well, excellent, Andy. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to spend some time with us today. So yeah, well, I guess we'll maybe get you on again for a future podcast. I'm sure this will probably spur some questions and maybe get you on to answer some of those. So so yeah, thanks again.
Hey man, thank you.
All right. Well, once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com. And yeah, I hope you guys have enjoyed this edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Be sure to check me out on iTunes, write a little review. If you don't mind, you can subscribe to this podcast there. And I'll talk to everybody next time.